So we're here in the first of this next series of podcasts, and the idea of this is to have a bit of an informal discussion about a topic for the week, answer some of the questions of our community, and really, you know, discuss some interesting kind of paddle events or stuff happening around the world.
Yeah, I think, we've sort of underplayed the fact that we're in the middle of the Avicii Arena, ready for the World Paddle Tour finals.
Just another podcast. Yeah, exactly. All our podcasts are going to be from World Paddle Tour, you know, player bench. I wish.
It's going to be difficult to top this one.
Yeah, I know. But start with a bang.
Casual. Yeah, we're just here. Here we are.
We're just relaxing in the Avicii Arena just before the finals are about to start.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's been a great week, really, actually, hasn't it? Because we're in Stockholm, and it's the first time for me for paddle. I've been ages ago for tennis, and I think same for you, right?
Same, yeah.
And, you know, obviously, Stockholm in Sweden is the home of paddle outside Spain, and we've seen everything there is to see. Well, not everything there is to see, but we've done some Slazenger clinics. We've been to the expo and seen, you know, the first of that kind, and then here in the World Paddle Tour in one of the most impressive stadiums for the World Paddle Tour.
Yeah, just as well, you know, for me, the community that Sweden has, the paddle community, especially, you know, for the paddle school, like, you know, people are so passionate about paddle. It's so great to actually meet the community, because obviously we're doing a lot of stuff online, so to actually meet people in person and
I think the Nordics and the Swedes are, you know, one of my favorite kind of audiences. They were following the paddle school from the beginning. They've always been our largest community. We can see through our analytics, you know, how supportive they are, and it's the same when we come in person as well. Like, you know, they're very, you know, vocal about the paddle. We saw this yesterday with the semi-finals. They get really stuck into the matches, and it's been at the same at all our events, the clinics we've done on court. They've given, you know, 110%, you know, each time. And right, same with the expo. I mean, you know, fantastic, wasn't it, to see all the people there?
Yeah, they love their paddle. They love it. You can see why, you know, like you say, it's the home of paddle outside Spain. They just, I think looking forward to other countries, you know, getting the paddle bug just like the Swedes have.
Yeah, and I mean, if we look at the events that we've done this week, we did the Slazenger clinics with the ambassadors, and we did that in the LADAP, the new kind of arena, I was going to call it. It's a club, essentially. Yeah. I mean, it's so big, it is an arena.
Feels like an arena.
Yeah, and you know, that was great, and we worked. The ambassadors came from all parts of Sweden to take part, and what a great group, really. Really enjoyed that time, and then we spent some time at the expo. We did our community clinic where people could come and get involved, win some prizes, which was great fun, high energy. And also, it was nice wandering around, wasn't it? Like speaking to all the different brands and the different softwares and clubs that people are getting involved.
Yeah, there's a big excitement, isn't there, for paddle? And you can see that with all these different, you know, smaller brands, really, but brands that look really good, but smaller ones that are trying to, you know, kind of get into the market. And I think that's just great. It's good for paddle, isn't it, in general, to see all these brands trying to, you know, build a brand.
And then yesterday and today we'll be here again for World Paddle Tour, the Swedish Paddle Open. And I mean, it's just an incredible arena, isn't it? It's fantastic. We've just hit on the court, and it's a huge echo because there's no one here. And they very kindly let us in a bit earlier because we said we wanted to do a bit of filming, and you know, they were very open to that. But you know, yesterday it filled out. I was quite impressed. It did fill out for the semi-finals, and it was a really kind of loud, engaging atmosphere, wasn't it, from the crowd?
Oh yeah, the atmosphere was awesome. I loved it, and today's final is going to be think it's going to be really, really good.
I think they just, you know, the Swedes have had paddle long enough that they just so appreciate this level.
Yeah.
Like the level being played yesterday was phenomenal, and again it'll be the same, you know, the same today. And you know, it's just great. It's great to see the, you know, lots of familiar faces, but lots of people also come into this because they know that Sweden has been a hub for paddle. And you know, and the clubs we go to, we kind of feel the same. I mean, it's difficult because the clubs we've gone to this week with the expo and the World Paddle Tour on, you know, I think we haven't seen as many people at the clubs as we might normally.
Yeah.
You know, the clubs are impressive. You know, you got LADAP, we went to Ultimate Paddle, we've been to Paddle Royale, you know, and so they probably weren't as busy as when I was last here, not here in Stockholm, but in Sweden, in Gothenburg or Helsingborg, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, that it felt busier. You know, and obviously this was your first time here as well. What were your thoughts on the club?
Yeah, I mean, it's my first time seeing Swedish paddle clubs like I've seen, and I was, to be fair, really, really impressed. Like, the facilities are, yeah, sort of beyond what I thought they would be. You know, when I think of, for example, you know, back in the UK, obviously paddle's a lot smaller, but, you know, it just doesn't compare. You know, like Ladapp, Stockholm, it was, yeah, you like you say, perhaps, you know, not as many people as we thought would be playing there, you know, but the facilities themselves, I thought, were really, really good. I was really impressed.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting because we speak to the club owners, the players, the coaches. And right now, I mean, you know, for the previous few years, paddling Sweden has just been, you know, a massive upward curve. And now it's reached a point where, you know, there's probably saturation and the, you know, demand has kind of equaled supply. And I think some of the clubs are struggling. And I feel there's a level of uncertainty from clubs, you know, clubs, retailers, coaches, they're all, you know, they're not sure what's going to happen. A lot of the people we've spoken to have said that, you know, we're coming up to 4,000 courts and they think that it's going to go down now. They're taking club, you know, courts out just because their growth was almost too fast for them to be prepared for it, really, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And you know, you can see that. You can see that in the clubs, that the occupancy has not, even with these events going on, you know, at times that I thought would be at least half full or more, they were empty. It's going to be interesting to see how it levels out, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, like you said, that the clubs perhaps weren't as busy as we thought, but I still feel like the passion for paddle is still there when we do interact with, you know, paddle players, right, in Sweden. Like, they're still, it's not like, you know, they might have reached a saturation, but it's not like, oh, you know, paddle is a fad and, you know, people aren't enjoying it anymore. There's still that passion. I just think, yeah, perhaps, like you say, the growth has been probably ahead of awareness, do you think, in terms of...
I think, ahead of awareness, but I think ahead of the kind of infrastructure that is required, I think, for a sport or for a governing body and you know, particularly with coaches, you know, and it's almost grown so fast that clubs have been, you know, throwing up around the country and they've thought, right, we just need a coach, and they've gone to an intermediate or a decent player and said, hey, could you start coaching? You know, and they might not have any coaching background or any experience in that regard. And the difficulty is that they were still getting lessons and they were still being busy, even though they probably were not confident what they were doing. And even speaking to coaches, you know, they're crying out for, you know, a bit more education, I think, and a bit more structure in their training. And the players now are knowledgeable enough and experienced enough in paddle that's also what they're looking for. And I think that happened, the growth of paddle happened ahead of that infrastructure for coaches and academies and junior academies and things like that. And you know, now I think that's probably a correction that needs to happen, you know, for players to get back in. And you know, we've been here with, you know, a group of Swedish players this week, and, you know, recreational players, and we've said, look, why are you not, you know, why don't you have lessons? And they're like, well, it's so difficult to find an experienced trainer. You know, they're either very expensive or they're unavailable. So instead of joining a group with an inexperienced player, I'm just not going to have lessons at all.
Yeah.
And it's sad to see that, but at the same time, it's not the club's fault, it's not the coach's fault. It's like, you know, that structure just, it needs to be there, really.
But I think that ability for players to continue playing the sport without necessarily needing lessons is almost why people love the game when they first pick up a racket, right?
Yeah, but yeah, well, exactly. It's a double-edged sword, isn't it? Because it's easy to learn, so you know, they can improve just by playing. But at the same time, you know, they're going to reach a point where they haven't had the technical work, and so they'll plateau, and then they reach that level of frustration. And I really, you know, this is the tipping point that, you know, I really hope they stay in the sport, you know, and don't give it up for something else. And that's really where, you know, we as coaches or us as coach educators need to step up and be like, right, you know, we can take that journey from here. You know, yes, we would rather take the journey from the beginning. We would rather you know, have a player at the beginning and like a blank canvas and you know, work, shape their game in the way we would want to. But we also appreciate that, you know, they want to play the game socially and learn it as a hobby first. So, I mean, that's kind of where we want to come in as well, isn't it, really, to help them on that journey.
Yeah, support players and coaches.
Mm-hmm.
I think interesting you're saying about, you know, the infrastructure. Do you, you know, obviously loads of countries emerging now with paddle, and they're kind of looking to Sweden, aren't they, as a kind of, you know, that's the first mover, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. What do you think are the sort of lessons? Because I know a lot of people are looking at Sweden going, okay, let's see what they've done. How would we do it or change it? What do you think?
It's interesting talking to, you know, club owners or potential investors or club builders that are Swedes doing it in other countries, because I think they're good people to look at because they've seen what's happened in Sweden. They're going to build, you know, clubs in other countries. And we've had those conversations a few times, you know, in the last couple of days. And the first thing that they're doing is that they're saying, right, we're going to build a club, but we need to do something different from the beginning. You know, not just throw up courts and you know, put in a little shop and hope it runs. They're like, right, we need, you know, a unique and quality academy. We need, you know, a kind of good retail space and you know, even food and beverage. And I find those areas in Swedish clubs, we just don't see them often. And you know, the examples, like, I think one of my favourite clubs in this visit has been Ultimate Paddle. Like, I loved it. I mean, Walking in, you got the courts everywhere. Love the seating. Love the setup for the club. And there'll only be, you know, a coffee machine. And you think, there's enough retail space here for, like, a big restaurant. You know, and I'm not saying that, you know, I know there's probably some restrictions within food and beverage licensing. And I'm not saying it's as easy to just throw that in there. But in other countries, I think now those investors, those club owners, that is a huge consideration, or it has to be, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's the experience around the paddle as well, right? I think, you know, perhaps, you know, people might have thought, you know, people love the sport so much, you throw up the courts, and, you know, that's where, you know, a club should focus on, is just the court stuff. But, you know, the experience off the court, like Ultimate Paddle for me as well was, you know, you walk in and it's, you know, you have a bit of like, wow, you know, you kind of see the whole club. Yeah, that for me is my favourite as well. But I agree. I think it's getting that balance right. I think between, you know, like you say, is it not necessarily a full-on restaurant, but it's something that perhaps, you know, has a bit of an experience outside of the court that keeps people in and kind of builds that, a bit like we're trying to do, builds a community, right, for that club.
And I think also, you know, on that, we're talking food and beverage there, but almost the same on the academy and program side, really, is, you know, and this is where it's going to be a very difficult job in Sweden to correct this path. But for countries that are getting into the sport, new countries, you know, they can set up a good academy from the start. And really, it's, you know, things like ladies clinics in the morning, or coffee mornings, or, you know, afternoon socials and activities within, you know, for juniors and all this type of stuff is, like, you know, really, really paramount to a good club community. And I think if they can do it from the start, it's easy to carry on, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a blank slate for a lot of clubs, isn't it, as well? You know, it's when you've got a brand new sport like this, you know, there's that kind of, you could do everything. And I think sometimes you can perhaps, you know, that you need that creative side, I think, to kind of think, what could you do differently to other clubs? Like you said, you know, now clubs are thinking that, but I think before it's just been pop the courts up. Perhaps looking at other sports, maybe like tennis clubs, or looking at other sports that, you know, you could kind of mirror. But I think with paddle, it's a really open space. You can be creative, and I think you will see a lot of clubs actually being, you know, perhaps doing other activity, you know, have other activities in a paddle club. Why not? You know, not just a paddle club.
Definitely. And you watch the growth of something like pickleball, and you see the variety and, you know, the type of activities they do. Why not? Like, you know, it's like you say, it's a blank slate, and they can really be creative.
Yeah.
So as part of the podcast as well, we want to have a theme for the week, and the theme this week will almost be tied a little bit into our videos. And it's convenient, really, because the clinics we've given this week have been a lot of Swedish players hitting really, really fast and rushing the net, like we've both done when we started. And so
I think, you know, the amount of times I heard, take your time, slow down, you know, you don't need to rush. It's
Yeah,
I heard that being said quite a lot this week.
And I feel like it's a bit unfair to say it's the Swedes, because everyone is doing it. The UK is exactly the same. You know, we've been to Finland, the other country, the tennis strong countries. It's been the same. So, you know, that idea of slowing the ball down, not rushing. You know, if you've come from tennis, learning the tennis, you know, tennis to paddle lob, that was, you know, going to be our video this week, and that's really, you know, it's a really difficult instinct to get out of, isn't it? I mean, you've played really high competitive level of tennis. We both have. And removing those instincts of attack, you know, and trying to finish the point is so difficult.
Yeah, it's like you say, it's an instinct. It's a mindset, which actually, you know, I think players know that, don't they? You know, you say to them, slow down. They go, yes, yeah. You know, it's not like they don't know. They shouldn't, you know, they shouldn't be doing that. But it's, it really is a mindset shift. It takes time and practice, doesn't it? And you know, it does come, but it's, you know, it is takes time.
It's specific practice, isn't it? Lobs, chiquitas, slowing that ball down and almost forcing yourself not to finish straight away. Enjoy the points going on a little bit longer so that, you know, you can get and actually it helps your tactical, you know, side of learning the game, because you start to work out what shots you know, become difficult or frustrating for your opponent, how you can play, how you can slow that ball down. It's really important, I think, particularly from tennis, to learn that quite early on, you know. Otherwise, you know, you get into a rhythm here, and it's very difficult, because if you're four, you know, friends, tennis players learning the game, and all four of you hitting hard, and you're the only one trying to slow down, it's really difficult to do that. So, you know, it's almost a mindset that the community needs to take up, and this is where these community training sessions and clinics going in, and we've done clinics before where we said, right, we're going to play half an hour of points or 20 minutes of points, no aggressive shots, we're just going to play with control lobs, and it then becomes a bit more paddle-esque,
yeah, and it's like you say, it's an instinct as well. You know, you could train it just takes time. You know, you can do a session where you practice slowing it down and everyone's playing, you know, kind of, you know, at a better pace, and then suddenly we say, right, let's play some points again, and then it's bang bang, everyone's playing fast, and it but I think over time, and like you say, when players start to understand the tactical side of things, they actually, you know, instead of just being told slow it down, they start to understand, oh, okay, actually I'm gonna, you know, win more points if I do this. And
and you see that light bulb go off, don't you? And they come off the court at the end and they go, oh, I really enjoyed that. I see now why we do that, you know.
And saves energy, right?
And I think a big thing is the why. Like, and this is, you know, we're going back to kind of coaches and coach education, is the why. Like, you know, if you're a player and your coach is telling you to do something on court, like, you must understand why.
Yeah.
And if it's not obvious, then you must ask your coach why.
Yeah.
And the coach should be explaining why anyway, you know. And once you understand why, you can then start putting it into your game and start improving your paddle.
Yeah. And what, I mean, the lob to lob from tennis to paddle as well, I think, is, again, actually, you know, it's a different kind of technical, you know, kind of skill, but I think it's still a mindset shift, isn't it? At least that I find, you know, that also the number of lobs you need to hit.
Yeah.
You know, in tennis, you know, one or two a match, probably max.
Well, we're seeing this on the court here, aren't we? I mean, you know, the 20, 30 lobs in some of these rallies, and you know, and you can see why it's very difficult to do a lot with that ball if they're comfortable defending at the back.
Yeah, it's interesting, actually, the kind of the net rushing and that lob tennis to paddle. I feel like they're kind of like related, you know, like a lot of players, especially that come to paddle, are not used to the back and forth of, you know, come to net, lob, build the point again, come back to net. They almost feel like, especially the people that I've coached, it's, you know, when they've, you know, moved, shifted and transitioned a couple of times, they feel really uncomfortable doing that. They sort of think, oh, you know, is this right? Because they're so used to in tennis coming forward and that's it.
Yeah. And we'll put both those videos, the net rusher and the lob tennis to paddle, down below in the description for YouTube, because we're going to do this as a YouTube content, but also as a podcast. So we'll put it in the show notes as well. And we really want to try and finish these podcasts with some of our community questions. So on our online community, you know, they've posted a couple of questions, and I think let's address them, you know, at the end of each of these podcasts. So have you got?
I've got some questions here. I'll ask you. Shall I fire away?
Yeah, go for it.
So the first question is: should I spend months learning the basics of playing before entering a tournament, or should I just enter and get playing?
That's good, isn't it? I mean, I suppose it depends. You know, your level of previous competition in other sports and probably your confidence and you know, if you enjoy competing, really, you know, if you enjoy competing and you've competed in different sports before and you feel confident, I say, why not? Like, you know, enter. It's a great way to learn about the game. You know, if you're someone that is a little bit more almost nervous about competition and you're worried about your performance, you feel a little bit of pressure, there's no pressure.
Yeah.
There's no pressure to go and compete. You know, you can get a little bit more comfortable on the court first. I think that's a very, you know, a very kind of personal thing. If you like to compete and you enjoy it, go for it.
Yeah.
If not, that's absolutely fine as well. Like, you know, everyone will have their different journey. So, yeah, that's.
I know for me, I love to compete. So I would say my biggest lesson, I'm interested to hear your thoughts as well, but the biggest lessons that I learn, I feel like the biggest improvement I have is when I play matches.
Mm.
And I don't know what, you know, it might just be the competition, it might be, but I feel like I always come away from a match kind of clear on, especially if you lose them.
I think interesting for you is it, like, because obviously I coach you in tennis.
Yeah.
So and now, you know, at the beginning of your paddle, I coached you in paddle as well. And I think you're a bit of a perfectionist, yeah, by nature. So you enjoyed competing at the beginning and you came away really frustrated. And then you knew what you wanted to train on. You're like, right, we're going to train now, yeah, before I play this next tournament. I don't want to embarrass myself. So, you know, that's what we're going for.
Turn that frustration into, okay, yeah, now what's, yeah,
yeah,
got to improve.
And that's, I think that's a good mentality to have. And I was kind of the same. I actually was in Dubai. I wished I had more competition. But that was it, really. Wherever you're learning the sport, you're going to have certain competitions you can enter.
Yeah.
I think that would be my suggestion for that.
I've been struggling a lot with my nerves when I play. I end up not focusing on winning, and instead I focus on not letting my partner down. Do you have any tips?
For me, this goes back to communication. Like, you know, have that conversation with your partner. Like, often players, you know, are so kind of conscious of, you know, letting their partner down or letting themselves down. They put pressure on themselves, you know, that, you know, and really their partner might be feeling exactly the same thing. So, you know, and for me, I always say this, communication starts before you even go on the court. You know, have that conversation, like sit down with a coffee with them before and just chat and get to, you know, if they're a new partner, get to know them. And if they're a regular partner, just see how they're doing on that day and have that communication. But if you've got a long-term partner and you're feeling that pressure from your partner, then either you need to have a kind of serious conversation with your partner or potentially try and find someone else to play with, because you won't play your best if you're feeling the pressure and you're feeling nerves. You want your partner to give you confidence. So I think, first of all, communication. Talk to your partner about it. They might be in the same boat. And even just to have that conversation might relax you both, and therefore you'll play some of your best paddle.
Yeah, I think sometimes as well, if you feel like your partner's getting frustrated, you sort of automatically assume, oh, it's because of me, you know, or you lose a point and your partner gets frustrated. But actually, you know, probably a lot of the time it's they're just sort of frustrated with themselves, and you almost start building up this idea that, you know, they're it's you. And I think, just being kind of... yeah, open communication with each other.
And you're there, most of the time, you're both there to enjoy it, right? Like, so it's not, you know, they're not playing the World Paddle Tour final. We're not having this, you know, this conversation with Paquito and Martin Dineno at the
show. Well, not yet.
Yeah. No. But yeah, I mean, that's what I would say for that. And I mean, that kind of concludes our first podcast in this new series. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Where are we going to be next? That's the question.
Who knows? But let us know. We're going to put this on the YouTube channel. So on the YouTube channel, let us know down in the comments if you like this type of content. And if you're listening to it on the podcast, don't forget to, you know, subscribe. And hopefully we'll see you on the next one.